Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Shabbat HaGadol. This week, Pesach is coming fast, and the Pardes faculty has prepared three different readings that you can use to enhance your Seder experience. The first is the Social Justice Seder, then the Rodof Shalom, Pursuer of Peace Seder, and third, the Educator Seder. These readings are available for you. You can go to elmad.pardes.org to download them and check them out. In addition, this week's podcast is about Shabbat HaGadol and also Pesach. It is by Neyman Novetsky. Neyman Novetsky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neyman Novetsky.
Thank you, Larry. This Shabbat is Shabbat HaGadol, known in part as such because of the last couple of lines of the Haftarah, which speak about Yom Hashem HaGadol VaHanora. As such, I wanted to devote this podcast not to the Parsha of the week, but rather to those last two lines of the Haftarah from Malachi, and mainly to the image of Eliyahu HaNavi. Let's start with the Psukim. At the very end of the Haftarah, we read, Hinei Anochi Sholeach Lachem et Eliyahu HaNavi lefnei bo Yom Hashem HaGadol VaHanora. Behold, I am sending to you Eliyahu the prophet before the coming of the day of God, the great and awesome. V'heshiv levavot abanim, v'lev banim alavotam, pen avo v'hiketi et ha'aretz chirim. And when Eliyahu comes, what will be his job? He will return the hearts of the fathers to the sons, and the hearts of the sons to the fathers. These two psukim speak about Eliyahu coming before this great and awesome day of God. And it seems that what Eliyahu's job is going to be is, one, to announce the coming of that day, but perhaps more importantly, to prepare us for it by somehow returning the fathers to the sons and vice versa. Who exactly are the fathers and sons? Perhaps the father is Hashem, the sons, Am Yisrael, and the idea is that Hashem, that Eliyahu is going to make peace between Hashem and the people. Or alternatively, we're referring to fathers and sons literally, that Eliyahu's job is to be to make peace between families, between men. Either way, this pasuk clearly speaks about Eliyahu as harbinger of some great day, perhaps harbinger of the times of Mashiach. I've always been fascinated by the figure of Eliyahu. The idea that he's going to be the one who's going to announce to us redemption, the final redemption, the time of Mashiach. Looking at his figure in Agadah, where he comes out as someone who is always helping the poor, being there for everybody, coming up unannounced in order to go and save, and contrasting that with his portrait in Tanakh, where he comes out as the most zealous of figures, a person who stands apart from the nation, a person who cares about God, but always accuses Am Yisrael, has always fascinated me as to how to put all these different pieces together. How does the Eliyahu of Tanakh become the Eliyahu of Agadah, of folklore? And why is it he who is chosen to be the one to announce the future redemption? We all know that on Leil HaSeder, many of us open the door when we get to a certain part of the Seder where we start reading the verses of Shvach HaMatra. There are various reasons given for the custom, but one of them, of course, is that we're opening the door for Eliyahu, that he's supposed to come and announce to us on this holiday of freedom, this holiday of redemption. He's supposed to announce the future redemption. And again, my question is why? Why was he chosen? And so what I wanted to do for the next 20 minutes or so is to explore the figure of Eliyahu, starting from Tanakh, skipping to Agadah, and trying to bridge those two portraits. So let's start with the Eliyahu of Tanakh. Eliyahu makes his appearance in the book of Kings in chapter 17, and he comes in unannounced, in a whirlwind of activity. Vayomer Eliyahu haTishbi mitoshavei Gilad el Achav, and Eliyahu from the settlers of Gilad comes and tells Achav, who is the king of the time, the worst king of Israel, Chai Hashem Elokei Yisrael asher amadati lefanav. Eliyahu swears in the name of God, Im yeah hashanim ha'eila talo matar ki im lefi dvarai. He swears that it will not rain unless he says so. Our first introduction to Eliyahu is his coming in without us being told that God told him so beforehand and announcing a drought. And even before we get to know Eliyahu, we already start to wonder, is Eliyahu acting even without the commands of God? Because we weren't told beforehand that he received any such instructions to tell the nation. And he says, it's not going to rain unless I say so. And the feeling you get is a very powerful Navi, perhaps one who has access to the keys of God, and it's God who agrees to his demands and not vice versa. The rest of the chapter goes on to describe that drought and how Eliyahu himself is personally saved, and how he goes and he gets water from a certain wadi. He's fed by the ravens, but his wadi also dries up. And he's sent instead to go and get fed by a certain widow who is suffering, her and her child, and how Eliyahu gets fed from them. Other chapters show a similar, strong, fiery Eliyahu. Eliyahu throughout these chapters seems to be someone who's acting on behalf of God, but perhaps without being even told to, but trying to get the people to return to God and to go against their idolatry. They've been worshiping the Baal, the Canaanite god, and Eliyahu time and time again tries to convince them not to. The next story tells of a standoff at Mount Carmel, where Eliyahu sets himself up against the prophets of the Baal and tells them, you bring a sacrifice and I'll bring a sacrifice. If your gods accept your sacrifice, well, then we'll know that they're real. If my God accepts my sacrifice, then we'll know that he's the true God. Of course, the prophets of the Baal are not able to get their God to eat up their sacrifice, whereas Eliyahu, despite the fact that he has strewn water all over his altar, is able to get God to accept his sacrifice. And this, of course, leads the people to say, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. And on the face of it, Eliyahu has succeeded in convincing the people. And as he does so, he goes and destroys and kills off all those 400 prophets of the Baal. Throughout, Eliyahu has been trying to convince the people through what we might call a light and sound show. He comes in an explosion. He makes a huge statement. No water, no food. 3 years of drought. The people suffer very harshly in order to learn their lesson. Here in the story of Mount Carmel, he's making a big show. You guys go look what you're doing in order to get your prophets to come and listen to you. Nothing happens. He, on the other hand, with all his water, out comes fire from God. Big show. The people seem to be convinced. When we get to the next chapter, though, we find out that they reverted back to their own ways. And in future chapters, Eliyahu acts similarly. In a different story, there are three messengers of the king who come and try to get him to come and have a meeting with the king. And each one of them, and their group of 50, Eliyahu calls out fire from God, and they get swallowed up. Eliyahu does not act quietly. He acts in a whirlwind of activity, trying to convince the people to change their ways. In the middle of all this, at some point, though, Eliyahu gets frustrated. His life is at risk. Because of all of his actions, the king and queen do not particularly like him. Izebel, the wife of the king Ahav, the queen, is herself a worshiper of the Baal, and she's out to get Eliyahu, and he runs away. He runs away to Hoav. A man who had never been part of the people now goes even further away, and he complains to God. And he says, God, I've been zealous for you my whole life, but your people nonetheless are not keeping the covenant. And there's nobody left. There's just me. And he wishes to die. And God then does his own sound and light show for Eliyahu. And the verses tell us that God passes in front of him in several different ways. First, God comes and it says, V'nei Hashem over, V'ruach gdola v'chazak mefarei karim u'mishabei sla'im lifnei Hashem, lo baruach Hashem. God first comes in the wind. And it's a very strong wind, capable of breaking mountains and capable of breaking rocks. But God's not found in the wind. V'achar haruach rash. And then God brings a big noise. V'lo barash Hashem, but God's not in that either. V'achar harash esh. And after the rash comes fire. V'lo ba'esh Hashem, God's not in the fire either. V'achar ha'esh, cold mamadaka. And after that comes a sound of a quiet stillness. And when Eliyahu sees this quiet stillness, that's when he feels God's presence. And God asks Eliyahu again, what are you doing here? And once again, Eliyahu says, I'm vengeful for God because they've left your covenant and they've killed all of your prophets, and it's only me who's left. And one wonders, well, what exactly is the message that God was sending him when he told him that he's not in the fire and he's not in the wind and he's not in the noise, but rather in a cold mamadaka? And I'm going to leave you with that question. We're going to come back to it in a few minutes. From this image of Eliyahu in Tanakh, let's fast forward to the image of Eliyahu in Agadah in folklore. As we said beforehand, it's a very different image. This image of Eliyahu from Tanakh, this zealous, fiery, strong personality who seems to be ever apart from the people, has no place in Agadah. In Agadah, Eliyahu is a man of the people. He's someone who comes and pops in unexpectedly to go and help this poor person to get some food for Shabbat. He goes and he talks to all the different chachamim, all of the wise men. They get visits from Eliyahu. He comes as different characters. For example, in the story of Esther, according to the Agadah, the figure of Harvona, who points outside and says, ah, you see that tree? That's the tree that Haman wanted to hang Mordechai on. Let's hang Haman on it instead. That, according to Agadah, is not Harvona, but really Eliyahu in disguise. I wanted to share with you just two of the famous Agadot about Eliyahu to get a sense of who he is in folklore. Famous story of a person named Nachum Ish Gamzu, known as such because he used to always say, Gamzu Letova. This too is for the good. The story is found in Masechet Ta'anit on Daf Chaf Aleph on page 21, where Nachum Ish Gamzu is sent as a representative of Am Yisrael to go to the emperor to bring some type of a tribute, some type of a gift. And he sets on his path, holding a big treasure box full of precious stones and metals and coins, all different things worth tons. And he goes on his way, and he stops off at a certain lodging place en route. And while he's asleep, a robber comes, sees his big treasure box, opens it up, empties it of all the precious stuff, and instead fills it with dirt. Innocent Nachum Ish Gamzu has no idea what happened. He wakes up in the morning, his box still feels heavy. He continues on his way till he gets to the emperor. As he gets there, he presents the box in front of the emperor. He opens it up, and lo and behold, inside is dirt. Nachum Ish Gamzu, being the person he is, says, Gamzu Letova, this also must be for the best. Has ever faith in God that it will turn out okay. But the stakes are against him. The emperor looks at the box, at the dirt, and says, what kind of gift is this? Are you mocking me? Just then, of course, Eliyahu appears in disguise. This time, he appears as one of the emperor's own servants, and he opens his mouth to the emperor and says, ah, don't be so quick to judge. I bet that that dirt must have magical properties. It must be the dirt from Avraham Avinu. That dirt, I bet, if you go and use it against your enemies, it'll become swords and spears and all sorts of ammunition that'll allow you to defeat your enemies. The emperor tries it out. It works. Am Yisrael, Nachum Ish Gamzu, are saved. That is a typical Eliyahu story. Coming at the moment that you're needed, coming to not accuse Am Yisrael, but to save them. Another famous story deals with Eliyahu and a character named Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, one of the wise men of the Talmud, is someone who is known to get visits from Eliyahu all the time. And the story goes that one day Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said to Eliyahu, you know what? I'd really like it if you would be able to take me with you as you wander through the streets. I just want to follow along, see what you do. So Eliyahu tells him, fine, come, but on one condition. The condition is that you can't ask me any questions as we go. So they set off on their path, and as they continue along, they reach a certain person's house who's very poor. Man and his wife, both very poor. And yet they greet Eliyahu and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi with the utmost hospitality and tell them, come join us, give them whatever they could possibly give them. As they leave in the morning, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi hears Eliyahu davening to Hashem, let their cow die. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is a little puzzled, but he keeps his promise. He doesn't ask Eliyahu a question. They continue on their way, and they reach the house of a wealthy miser. Beautiful mansion, gorgeous, huge, so much stuff, obviously wealthy. And when they ask for hospitality, this man says, sorry, can't give you any. And he chases them away. This time as Eliyahu leaves, he davens to God, he prays to God, and he says, there's a crumbling part of his wall. Let that wall be repaired. Again, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is totally puzzled. why in the world is he going and giving this guy a promise that his wall should be rebuilt? They continue on their way, and they get to a certain community, and they go to the shul, they go to the synagogue of the community, and again ask for hospitality. There's a ton of people there, but between all of them, all they can offer Eliyahu and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is a little bit of bread and salt, almost nothing. Eliyahu turns to them and gives them a bracha, and he gives them a blessing, and he says, let every single one of you become a leader in your community. By now, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi can't hold his puzzlement in anymore. And he says, I know I told you I wasn't going to ask any questions, but I can't take it anymore. I don't understand you. What have you been doing? And Eliyahu explains to him, he says, well, that first couple that we went to, that poor couple, I saw in prophecy that she was going to die. And so I davened to Hashem that he take the cow in her stead. When we got to that miser's house, that wealthy miser's house, I saw that hidden in his wall, in that crumbling wall, was a treasure. And I knew that if the wall continued to crumble, he'd find that treasure. And so I prayed to God that the wall should be rebuilt, that he should never be able to merit that treasure. And finally, he explains his last bracha to the community. He says, I daven to them that every man should be a leader, because everyone knows that if every man is a leader in the community, there will never be peace in that community. So, of course, the message of this Agadah is really one about when you see bad things happening to good people and good things happening to bad people, that sometimes it means that we just don't know the full story. But of course, it also gives us insight into the Eliyahu of Agadah. This Eliyahu is someone who's correcting other people, but not in that same harsh, fiery way of Sefer Melachim, but he's giving good for the person who deserves it, and he's wishing bad on the others without all of that fire and brimstone. And so we have one Agadah after another of Eliyahu saving people, Eliyahu being a part of people, coming to help quietly, unobtrusively, not to make anybody know who he is, but just so that things should be good, things should be right, people should be rewarded, and there should be peace amongst people. And again, our question resurfaces. How do we get from the Eliyahu of Tanakh to the Eliyahu of Agadah? What's the connection between the two different portraits? And I think here the answer goes back to perhaps part of what we were saying before, and the message that Hashem was giving Eliyahu when he ran away to Har Choriv. When Eliyahu was complaining there and saying, look, I've been zealous for you, and yet I haven't been successful. God was giving him a message. He said, I'm not in the fire. I'm not in that loud noise. I'm not in the wind. I'm in a cold mamadaka. It's possible that perhaps Hashem was telling Eliyahu, your heart's in the right place. Yes, you should be trying to get B'nai Israel back on track. But maybe your methodology wasn't the best. Not for these people at this time. They didn't need fire and brimstone. Big shows don't always make people change. And if they make people change, that change doesn't always last. It's the cold mama daka, that route perhaps, was the route that you were supposed to go. That's one part of the story. Of course, another part of the story is the end of Eliyahu's life. In Perek Bet of Melachim, it describes how Eliyahu is taken away. And the description there is not of somebody who dies, but someone who goes up to Shamayim. And even though some commentators suggest that he actually did die, others suggest no. This Perek is describing an Eliyahu who goes and is taken to God, but actually never dies. And there's enough room in the parak for that ambiguity, and that chapter allows definitely for that read. But perhaps the clincher for that read comes from a pasuk in Divrei HaYamim, in the book of Chronicles. In chapter 21 there, we read about the time period of the king who reigned after Eliyahu was taken to Shamayim, after Eliyahu was taken to heavens. And we read this very funny line. Ve'avo elav mechtav me'Eliyahu hanavi le'mor, etc., etc. This king, we're told, receives a letter from Eliyahu. Now, of course, the fact that Eliyahu has already been taken, and yet the next king receives a letter for him, supports all those who suggest that perhaps Eliyahu never died. So, of course, this leads Agadah to be able to play with the figure of Eliyahu. If Eliyahu never died, then he must still be around someplace. And they question, well, if he's still around someplace, what kind of personality does he have? What does he do with his time? And again, it goes back to that whole question of how did Hashem view Eliyahu the first time around? And here, I wanted to read another Agadah that deals with that question. The Agadah talks about three different Nevi'im, and it tells us, Shlosha banim hem. God has three sons. Echad tava kvod ha'av v'kvod ha'ben. One of them demanded the honor of the father and the son. Echad tava kvod ha'av v'lo kvod ha'ben. One demanded the honor of the father, but not the honor of the son. V'achad tava kvod ha'ben v'lo kvod ha'av. And he says, and one demanded the honor of the son, but not the honor of the father. And then the Agadah goes and identifies each of these. The prophet who demanded both the kavod, the honor of the father, and the son, they identify as Yirmiyahu. He's someone who is able to be both protagonist, accuser, and defender all at once. The prophet who they say cared only about the son but not the father, cared about Am Yisrael but not God, they identify as Yonah. Because based on Chazal, based on the Midrash, Yonah refused to do God's bidding, refused to prophesy because he feared the negative repercussions for Am Yisrael. He cared enough about Am Yisrael that he refused to listen to God. And of course, the flip side of him, says the Agadah, is Eliyahu. He was Tovea Kvod Ha'av, but not Kvod Ha'ben. He demanded the honor of the father, but not the honor of the son. He was the ever accuser. He was the protagonist throughout, always saying, but you have to return to God, you have to return to God, always accusing Am Yisrael, never defending them. And in this Midrash, Hashem says, and because of that, you're going to lose your prophecy. For right after the scene on Har Chorev, when Eliyahu complains to God and God teaches him the message of the Kol Dmama Daka, that God's in that still voice, Eliyahu doesn't seem to get the message. And so God tells him, appoint Elisha as your successor. This Midrash here seems to be suggesting that the true role of a Navi is to be able to blend Tviyat Ha'av and Haben, the demands of the father and the son, to be able to be defender and accuser at once. To recognize that, yes, your job is to bring Bnei Yisrael back to God, but your job is also to defend Bnei Yisrael before God. Eliyahu seemed to have only one side and got something. You can't be a Navi if you don't have both. Another Midrash that gets across the same idea is the background for why we have a Kisei Eliyahu, a chair of Eliyahu at a Brit Milah, where, again, drawing on our same verses, when Eliyahu says, Kano kineti l'Hashem, I'm zealous of Hashem, and he says that Bnei Yisrael did not keep your covenant, Hashem gets all upset at him. And he says, you're gonna tell me that Bnei Yisrael are not keeping my covenant? Well, you know what? I'm going to demand of you then that you be present at every single Brit Milah that's going to happen, and you'll see my children keeping their covenant. It's not Eliyahu's job to find out just what Bnei Yisrael aren't doing. It's supposed to be his job to find out what they are doing correctly. And so, what is the bridge between the Eliyahu of Tanakh and the Eliyahu of Agadah, the Eliyahu of folklore? So Achanan Samet, and I think other people probably before him, have suggested that perhaps what the Agadah is doing is allowing Eliyahu to have his tikkun, to have his corrective. The Eliyahu of Tanakh never seemed to totally get the message that he's supposed to be not just accuser, but also defender, that he's not supposed to act just in fire and brimstone, but also through a still, quiet voice. That there are different ways of reaching people. And so the Eliyahu of Agadah transforms Eliyahu into a man of the people, into a defender, into someone who's not always out there being Eliyahu, that everyone sees him and hears him, but the Eliyahu comes in disguise, who no one knows who he is, who comes in that still, quiet voice. And it's perhaps then very fitting that back to our Haftarah, we say that what's his job? V'heishiv lev avot abanim v'lev banim al avotam. The Eliyahu, who's the harbinger of the Mashiach, is someone who has learned that he has to be tovea kvod ha'av and kvod ha'ben. That yes, he has to be accuser, but he also has to be defender, and that he has to learn how to mesh those two things and bring them together. And with that, I hope I've given you a little bit of insight into a fascinating figure of Eliyahu, and wish that maybe this Pesach we will all merit to see him and hear the news of our future redemption. Pesach Sameach.
Thank you, Neima. Thanks for tuning in. Pesach Sameach, and we'll see you with the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.